Welcome back, dear listeners, to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales. And welcome on in to any new listeners. This is the place where curiosity doesn't just kill the cat, it invites the cat to a cursed town and hands it an ancient artifact it should definitely not be touching. I'm your host, the Tale Teller, and tonight's story is a slow descent into madness, fueled by academic obsession, ominous whispers, and brought to you by one very bad decision. Our protagonist, a researcher of the strange, the forbidden, the kind of knowledge that gets people disappeared. He receives a letter, no sender, no explanation, just a desperate plea and two obsidian pendants that swallow light like they're plotting something. The task? Study them. Understand them. Oh, and destroy them. Somehow. No pressure. This little errand takes him to Jathala, a town that exists on paper but not on maps, a place where doors stay locked for a reason and shadows don't always belong to something living. The more he digs, the clearer it becomes. And he often asks that question, were these pendants locked away for a very good reason? Well, you'll just have to find out. So grab a cup of tea, maybe something calming, like a simple black tea or some honey water tea, or hell, even holy water just in case. The pendants have been found. Jathala is waiting. And something is whispering. Let's begin. Enjoy. The Obsidian Pendants. In the beginning, there was a man whose darkness and isolation were allies in his desire for knowledge of the unknown. His name was of no great importance, for he had no long since abandoned the need for introductions. His world was one of dusty tomes and forgotten myths, of shadowed figures scrawled into the margins of forbidden texts. He had chased whispers through brittle parchment, traced bloodied runes in candlelight, and pieced together the fevered ramblings of those who had glimpsed horrors beyond comprehension. It was in this existence, bound by ink and dread, that the letter arrived. The envelope was unremarkable, save for the thick, fibrous texture of its parchment, coarse as dried skin. There was no return address, only his own name, written in a hurried, near desperate hand. He slid a finger beneath the wax seal, and the envelope parted with a sound that reminded him of sinew tearing from bone. Two pendants spilled onto his desk. They were blacker than the void between stars, their surfaces swallowing light rather than reflecting it. Each was shaped into a twisted, impossible form, neither geometric nor organic, their edges irregular yet deliberate, as if their shapes obeyed a logic not meant for human eyes. Thin veins of something metallic, gold or perhaps something older, ran through the obsidian like a network of nerves. He felt, rather than saw, a pulse in the stone. As though the pendants were living things, forced into unnatural stillness. He did not touch them immediately. He had studied enough to know that the artifacts of uncertain origin often carried unseen burdens. Instead, he turned to the letter, unfolding it with slow precision. The ink bled into the fibers of the paper, smudged in places by what looked like sweat-stained fingertips. To the one who seeks truth, these must be studied. They must be understood. And above all, they must be destroyed. I do not know how, nor do I have time to learn. The burden is yours now. Jathala awaits. There was no signature, no further explanation, only the weight of expectation and the two terrible pendants that now occupied his space. His fingers twitched, drawn inexorably toward them. The rational mind told him he should refuse. Cast them away. Burn the letter. Forget this intrusion. But the rational mind had never won against curiosity. He reached forward and pressed his fingertips to the obsidian, and the world around him exhaled. The walls of his study darkened, the gaslight dimming as if recoiling. The air thickened with the scent of scorched metal and damp earth, a sensation neither warmth nor cold seeped into his bones, coiling into the marrow. The silence deepened, and for the briefest moment, he felt watched. Then, as quickly as it had come, the presence receded. The room remained unchanged, save for the faint ringing in his ears, like the echo of a sound too vast to comprehend. He exhaled, only now realizing he had been holding his breath. The pendants remained before him, unchanged, yet now something more than mere objects. They had acknowledged him, and that, he knew, was only the beginning. Chapter 2, The Markings of the Lost. The pendants sat upon his desk like twin black holes, their presence seeming to draw the very light from the room. Though he was well versed in the occult, in the trappings of hidden knowledge, he had never encountered artifacts quite like this. They bore no obvious sigils of any known sect, no markings that declared allegiance to ancient orders, and yet there was something in their design, something wrong. He retrieved a magnifying glass from the drawer, careful not to touch the pendants again. He was not certain whether his reaction had been purely psychological or something far worse. He leaned in close, scanning the dark surfaces, looking for the smallest deviation, the subtlest imperfection. And then he saw it. At first, he mistook it for a crack in the obsidian, a thin, jagged line that ran from the top of one pendant to its base. But as he adjusted the angle of the light, the line shifted, becoming deeper, more deliberate. It was not a flaw in the stone. It was writing. Not carved, not painted, but embedded within the obsidian itself, as if the words had been whispered into its formation rather than etched by human hands. The script was unfamiliar, but not entirely unknown. He had seen fragments of it before, scattered throughout forbidden texts and half-burned manuscripts, always incomplete, always buried beneath layers of academic dismissal. The language of something before. A tongue that predated history, that had been erased not by time, but by intention. He turned to his bookshelf, his fingers ghosting over the spines of ancient tomes. Some he had acquired through official channels, academic institutions, forgotten collections. But others had come from far darker sources, markets held in the ruins of temples, exchanges conducted in dim-lit rooms where no names were given. He selected 3 volumes: The Codex of Hollow Tongues, Prehistory and Forbidden Speech, and The First Mouths. The pages of each were yellowed with age, brittle and cracked, their ink faded to near illegibility. These books had cost lives to procure. He hoped they would now serve a purpose worthy of that price. As he flipped through the pages, he matched symbols, cross-referencing glyphs, piecing together what little remained of a lost lexicon. Slowly, painfully, a pattern began to emerge. The markings upon the pendants were not just words. They were instructions. Each phrase spoke of separation, of something having been spilt, divided, bound within these stones. Not a curse, not a blessing, but a containment. The pendants were not trinkets. They were prisons, and he had touched them. His stomach tightened. He closed the books, staring at the obsidian shapes with newfound unease. His patron had asked for their destruction. but what would be unleashed if they were broken? The answer he suspected was waiting for him in Jothala. And it was waiting for him to make a mistake. Chapter 3. The Scholar of Shadows. In the beginning, there had been nothing but curiosity. It had started as a childhood obsession with whispered myths, ghost stories told around candlelight. While others grew and left their fears behind, he had chased them into adulthood, seeking the places where truth and fiction bled into one another. The world was not too kind to those who looked too closely at its seams, but he had never been interested in kindness. He had spent years studying what others dismissed, ancient rituals that should have been lost, texts that had survived when they should have been burned. He had scoured libraries that no longer officially existed, followed the footsteps of scholars who had vanished into their own obsessions. The world had always been layered, reality held together by fragile strands of order, and he had spent his life tracing the threads that led into that darkness. And now, that very darkness sat before him in the form of two obsidian pendants. He had seen artifacts before, of course. Idols recovered from sunken ruins, books written in the ink that glowed beneath candlelight, relics whose histories were so vile that even touching them left a residue of unease. But these pendants were different. They did not threaten. They waited. There was no question now that they had been made for a purpose, nor that their very existence was an act of desperation. Someone had created them to hold something, but whether that thing had once been human, divine, or something entirely other, he could not yet say. He turned his gaze to the digital glow of his computer screen, its sterile light and stark contrast to the ancient weight of the pendants. Knowledge was no longer bound by parchment and ink. It was scattered across the labyrinth of the modern world, hidden behind paywalls, locked in encrypted archives, buried in deep forums where only the truly persistent could dig. He fed the symbols he had translated into his databases, cross-referencing against every obscure source he'd amassed over the years, a process both painstaking and exhilarating. Each matched glyph was a pulse of discovery, a jolt of progress in the endless unraveling of forgotten history. Finally, a result. A name. A name that bled into his thoughts. The Shire had appeared in texts dating back thousands of years, referenced in fragmented records spoken of only in the past tense, a place that had once existed but had now somehow ceased to be. It was not destroyed. It was not abandoned. It had simply vanished. And now he was being sent there. He leaned back, his fingers pressing together in contemplation. His patron had provided no instructions beyond a plea for destruction. But he knew that could not be the full truth. Someone else had known what these pendants were. Someone else had spent years ensuring they were never found. But now, they had been found. And someone, perhaps something, was waiting for their return. Chapter 4, The Road to Jothala. The journey began in silence. The train cut through the misted countryside like a blade through old parchment, its rhythmic churning lost beneath the weight of his thoughts. The letter, the pendants, the desperate plea, each piece sat heavy in his mind, their implications far darker than he had first assumed. Jothala was no ordinary place. Even among the scattered records he had unearthed, there was no consensus on what had happened there. Maps that once marked its location now bore only empty space. Accounts that referenced the Shire never explained its fate. Only that those who went looking for it never returned. And now it was calling him. He sat alone in the dim carriage, the other passengers reduced to murmuring shapes in the haze of oil-lit lanterns. The air smelled of damp wool and soot, the scent of long travels and restless bodies. Outside, The land stretched in endless shadow, rolling hills swallowed by thick fog, trees twisting into gnarled silhouettes beneath a starless sky. The pendants rested in a small wooden box beside him, wrapped in cloth, untouched since that first night. He had no desire to feel them again, to endure the creeping sensation that had seeped into his bones at their mere presence. Instead, he studied the papers in his lap, documents he had compiled on Jothala, scraps of lore gathered from sources long since buried. There were no photographs, no modern records, only crude sketches and fragmented descriptions. A town swallowed by the earth. A place where time does not move. A village that no longer casts a shadow. It was nonsense, yet nonsense had a way of proving itself truthful in the darkest corners of the world. A sharp knock against the window snapped him from his thoughts. He turned quickly, expecting to see the blurred landscape, but instead, only blackness. The window reflected nothing. No trees, no road, no sky, just a void stretching beyond the glass. His heart slowed. Then, a shape. Something pressed against the other side. His form shifting, stretching as though struggling to take shape. It had no face, no eyes, only a smear of movement. A suggestion of limbs reaching forward, dragging across the pane with a sound like wet fingers on glass. The air in the carriage thickened, the murmurs of passengers faded into an oppressive quiet. Then, as suddenly as it had appeared, the shape dissolved. He exhaled sharply, pulse pounding against his ribs. The train remained in motion, steady and unbroken. The passengers had not noticed. Or perhaps they could not. He turned back to his papers, though he no longer read them. Jothala was waiting, and something new he was coming. Chapter 5. The Hollow Shire. The train left him at a nameless station, abandoned except for the whisper of wind through rotting beams. No station master, no ticket counter, no signs of life. Only rusted tracks disappearing into the mist, as if no train had ever passed through. As if the one that had brought him here had already been forgotten by the land itself. Jothala lay beyond the hills, where the road twisted like an old scar through the earth. His boots met damp soil as he moved forward, the air thick with the scent of something old. Like rain-soaked stone and decaying wood. There were no birds, no rustling of unseen animals, only the wind. And even that carried a stillness he did not trust. The path narrowed as he climbed higher, the trees shifting from thick, tangled roots to skeletal husks. They stood like blackened bones against the sky, their bark peeling in long, curling strips, as though something had tried to shed them from the inside. He ran his fingers along one as he passed. The wood crumbled at his touch, soft as wet paper. Then, the houses appeared. Jothala had been a village once. He could see its remains nestled against the valley, a place meant for warmth and life. But there was nothing left to suggest either. The homes, if they could still be called that, were hollowed out carcasses, their roofs collapsed, their walls clawed with deep gashes. Some still bore remnants of the lives they'd once held, a rocking chair swaying without wind, a dinner table set with dishes long since blackened with age. He passed a doorway where something had written along the frame, the words carved deep, precise, desperate. Do not look at them. Do not listen. Do not speak. His breath slowed. There was something wrong with the air here. He could feel it pressing against his skin, humming beneath his flesh like a second pulse. The pendants, still wrapped and hidden in his pack, grew heavier with each step. though he had not touched them since his arrival. At the center of Jathala stood the remains of what had once been the church. Its steeple leaned precariously, one side collapsed, as though some great weight had crushed it from above. The windows were empty sockets, the door missing, leaving only darkness yawning beyond the threshold. He stepped forward. The moment his foot touched the stone on the church's entrance, the silence broke. A whisper, not from within, but behind him. He turned sharply, eyes scanning the ruined village, the dead trees, the road that had led him here. Nothing moved. Then, from the corner of his vision, something stepped from the doorway of a ruined home. No, not stepped. Unfolded. Its limbs stretched too long, its body pulling itself upright as if remembering how to be human. The skin was dark, not with pigment, but with shadow, as though it had been scorched into its form. Where a face should have been, there was only the suggestion of features shifting, twisting, never settling. It did not move toward him. It simply stood, watching, waiting. A second figure emerged from another doorway, its body moving with the same unnatural grace, silent as breath. Then a third, rising from behind a collapsed wall, its limbs crawling over the stone like an insect testing its surroundings. They did not blink. They did not breathe. But he knew without question they were seeing him. He stepped back onto the path. The whisper returned, curling around his ears like wet silk. It was not one voice, it was many. Overlapping, whispering in words he could not understand but could feel sinking into him.
Do not look. Do not listen. Do not speak.
The warning carved into the wood was a desperate thing. A last attempt by someone who had come before him. He did not know if they had survived. He did not know if he would. But he had come to destroy the pendants, and something in Jathala was waiting to stop him. Chapter 6. The pendants must break. The whispering never stopped. It had started as a murmur in the back of his skull, a trickle of sound pooling in the hollows of his ears, words just beyond comprehension. But now, as he stood before the ruined church of Jathala, it was a tide rising against his mind, pressing against the fragile barrier of his thoughts. The figures had not moved, but he could feel them growing nearer, not in distance, but in presence, in the way the air thickened with their weight. The way their forms wavered like candlelight at the edge of his vision, he stepped into the church. The air inside was colder, heavier, as if the very walls had swallowed the last breath of whatever congregation had once gathered here. The wooden pews were broken, shattered into splinters and piled in the corners like abandoned kindling. The altar had collapsed, its stone cracked down the center, and the pulpit lay on one side, as if someone had tried to drag it towards the door before abandoning the effort. And beneath it, something glowed. He moved forward, slow and deliberate. His instincts screamed against it. Do not touch it. Do not look too closely. Do not breathe too deep. But curiosity had always been his downfall. He crouched, shoving the pulpit aside, revealing what lay beneath. A circle, carved deep into the stone floor. At first glance, it seemed a mess of jagged symbols, a senseless sprawl of intersecting lines. But as his eyes traced the pattern, the shape revealed itself. It was a mirror of pendants,
the same twisting form, the same unnatural geometry. This was not a mere carving. This was a seal. His pulse quickened. He reached into his pack, pulling free the wooden box where the pendant lay wrapped. His fingers hesitated over the cloth, but there was no longer time for caution. He unwrapped them. The moment the obsidian touched the air, the whispering screamed. The walls groaned, the ceiling creaked, dust and splinters raining down at the church shuddered like a dying thing. The figures outside, he could not see them, but he knew they were moving now, closer, closer, drawn by the unveiling of the pendants. His vision swam, his knees buckled, and for a moment he feared he had fallen. But when he looked down, he was still standing. Only the ground had moved. The circle was no longer carved into stone. It was open. A doorway into something vast and starless, an abyss with no reflection, no depth, no end. And from that abyss, they reached for him. Hands, too many hands. Fingers curling over the edge, skin stretched too tight, bones too long. The remnants of something that had once been men but had forgotten how to be. The pendants pulsed in his hands, no longer cold stone but beating, alive. He knew then the truth. These were not merely artifacts. They were pieces. The pendants were the last fragments of what had been locked away beneath Jothala. The shattered remains of something that had once been whole, something that now hungered to be whole again. And he had brought them here. He did not think. Thinking would mean hesitating, and hesitation meant death or worse. With a force beyond reason, beyond fear, he threw the pendant into the abyss. The screaming stopped. For a moment, there was nothing. The world held its breath. Then, the hands snapped back, retreating into the darkness with a force so violent, it sent shockwaves through the ground. The air split with the sound of stone cracking, of something vast collapsing inward. The seal sealed itself, the abyss folding in on itself like flesh knitting clothes over a wound. And then silence. The whispering was gone. The figures beyond the church had vanished, leaving only empty doorways and windless streets. The weight that had pressed against his mind had lifted, though its absence was not relief. It was an ache, a space left behind where something had once quailed, waiting. He was alone. Jothala was still and lifeless once more. He exhaled the first true breath he had taken since arriving. His hand still trembled, his mind raw with what it had touched, but the pendants were gone. And the seal held. He turned from the altar, stepping back into the cold light of morning. The mist had begun to recede, the trees standing still and empty. Jothala had claimed no new victims today. But as he walked the ruined streets one last time, he could not shake the feeling that something had watched him leave. Epilogue: The Weight of Knowing. The road away from Jothala was unchanged, but he was not. The train station, as forgotten as before, waited for him in the mist, its track stretching toward places where reality still held firm. He stepped onto the platform, dropped his pack beside the empty bench, and sat. There was no ticket to buy, no train schedule to check. The train would come. It always had. His fingers still bore the faintest tremor, though whether from exhaustion or the echo of what he had touched, he could not say. The pendants were gone. The seal held. The whispering had stopped. And yet, his mind replayed those final moments in the church. The abyss swallowing its own. the hands snapping back as if called home. The seal had closed. He had seen it, felt it, but what had truly been accomplished? Had he buried something, or had he simply reset the clock? Jathala had not resisted him. It had let him go. He reached into his coat pocket and withdrew the letter that had started it all. The parchment felt heavier now, though the ink had not changed. He ran a thumb over the words. They must be destroyed. They had been. Hadn't they? The wind stirred, curling through the station like breath through hollow ribs. He exhaled and let the letter slip from his fingers, watching as it tumbled along the ground, vanishing into the fog. A distant whistle cut through the silence. The train was coming. He did not look back toward Jathala. Some doors once closed were better left that way. And thus concludes the Obsidian Pendants of Jathala. Thank you for listening. And so, dear listeners, our journey comes to an end. Or at least, that's what we'd like to believe, right? The pendants are gone, the seals hold, and Jathala has slipped back into the silence. It never truly left. But some things don't stay buried, some doors don't stay shut. And if history has taught us anything, is that the curious never really learn. Our researcher walked away, but did he escape? Or did something let him go? Perhaps somewhere in the dark, the whispering has only just begun again. Thank you for joining me on tonight's tale of mystery, madness, and ominous warnings that were absolutely ignored. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow, subscribe, and of course, share it with someone who definitely wouldn't touch a cursed artifact, you know, just in case. And if you get a chance, don't forget to leave an iTunes review or swing on by my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/SFGT if you like what I do and want to support the show. And speaking of amazing support, I want to thank my Ode Night Tea Titan, my White Tea Warlords, and my Old Grey Enforcers. First up is the Guardian of Forbidden Knowledge, Matto Star, my Ode Night Tea Titan. A legendary thank you to none other than you, you amazing keeper of wisdom, seeker of mysteries, and most importantly, the person smart enough to probably never touch a cursed obsidian pendant. Right, Matto? Right? Dudio, if there's one thing this story has taught us, is that some knowledge is better left undiscovered. But not you, Matto Star. You're the kind of person who could walk into Jathala, give the Whispering Horrors a stern talking to, and still make it back in time for a perfectly brewed cup of tea. Your support isn't just generous. It's the kind of protective sigil this podcast needs to keep the Eldritch Nightmares at bay. Without you, I'd probably be deciphering cryptic symbols in the dark with nothing but a weak flashlight and a bad idea. So here's to you, Matto Star, the light in the abyss, the tea in the madness, and the only person I trust to proofread an ancient cult manuscript without accidentally summoning something unspeakable. May your tea always be warm, your books always be unblighted, and your parcels never contain ominous artifacts. Thank you for being a true legend and my friend. Have a wonderful, wonderful week ahead, mate. And thank you for your support. And to my amazing White Tea Warlords, I'm lucky enough to have four legends. First up is Lezasaurus Rex. Stronger than any ancient seal, more powerful than an Eldritch Horror's grip. If something tried to escape from an obsidian pendant, you'd bench press it right back where it came from. Or power lift it into oblivion. Keep pumping iron and protecting reality, my friend. You're a superstar. Thank you, Leza, for being my pal. Thank you for your support. And have a kick-ass week. Keep pumping the iron, you living Hercules.
my next White Tea warlord, Joseph Schroeder. If anyone could survive Jathala, it's you. Maps vanish? You've got backups. Strange whispers? Noise-cancelling headphones. Cursed pendants? You're already three steps ahead with a sledgehammer. The apocalypse could take notes from you, Joseph. And your unperturbed logic will put you leagues ahead anyone that tried to enter Jathala and live. We could learn a thing from you, buddy. Mate, thank you so much, Joseph, for your support, for being my pal, and have yourself a brilliant week ahead. Thank you so much, mate. And Maya, the queen of cats and cryptic horrors, if those whispering shadows had any sense, they'd be offering you tribute instead of trying to spook travelers. No doubt your feline army would have Jathala cleaned up in no time. One hiss and a scratch at a time, of course. But Maya and your feline army would wreak havoc on those shadow creatures. You're an absolute legend. Thank you so much, Maya, for your support and your kindness. And thanks for being my pal. Have a absolutely wonderful week ahead of yourself. Thank you, mate. And of course, Sangeetha, the dreamwalker, peacemaker, and the only one wise enough to actually listen to the warnings. While the rest of us are poking at cursed artifacts, you're the one guiding lost souls away from doom and away from the artifacts, keeping the balance the universe needs and all the horrors in check. Thank you, Sangeetha. You are brilliant. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your kindness, and have a absolutely wonderful week ahead of you as well. To all my White Tea warlords, your support keeps this podcast protected. If darkness comes knocking, I'm hiding behind you, okay? And to my Ode Night Tea Titan, the deity that protects this podcast, at every single turn, Matto Star, thank you for your unwavering, unshakable kindness and generosity. Thank you for being my pal again. And now I want to thank my Earl Grey Enforcers, you know, guardians of logic, the first line of defense against bad decisions are my Earl Grey Enforcers. And I am lucky to have Jessica Garcia, Seductive Smiles, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Peter Raffaelli, and Chad Warren. And an honourable mention to Michael Krupp and Jane Gumnick as Chamomile contributors. Thank you so, so much for your support, everyone. And I put it all back into production. And possibly a little bit of tea. But thank you so much. Now, until next we meet, keep your lights low and your curiosity in check. And for the love of all things sane, if you ever receive a package with a no return address, maybe, just maybe, send it right back. Sleep well if you can. And as always, till next we meet.
Ghostly tales centuries old.